You are listening to the eReal Estate Coach Podcast, featuring RealTrends top 500 broker, Jim Remley. On this show, we interview interesting people in the real estate industry to help agents, broker owners, and team leaders accelerate their performance.
Hey guys, I'm super excited. We have Beth Matthews on the program. She's from Envision Real Estate, but is an absolute rock star in the industry. She's got an incredible background and she's got a great, great message we're going to be talking about today. Beth, welcome.
Thanks, Jim. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited. But before we jump into kind of our hot topic, and we've got a lot of things to talk about in regards to value building and value delivery and really selling ourselves and defending our commissions, I want to jump into your background so people can get to know you a little bit better. So Beth, tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. Ironically, I had an epiphany not too long ago that I've been in some form of sales since I started working. For those that are in a market with Wegmans grocery stores, I started as a cashier, and about 6 months in, they pulled me off of the cash register and had me working out on the floor as a demo girl, which was essentially selling product that a vendor had requested get special attention. But through that, I've been in outside sales, I've been in retail sales, and just prior to my real estate career, I was a drug dealer. Legally, I was in pharmaceutical sales. So the draw to real estate had been there for quite a while. And I took the plunge to get my license and make it my career towards the tail end of 2008, beginning of 2009. So not the ideal time.
Tough market.
Yeah. It was an interesting conversation with my husband at the time, who's like, you're going to give up this great career, company car, all these benefits to go work in an environment that you may or may not collect a check. And by the way, are you sure you know what you're doing? Have you been watching the news? The real estate market is not in top shape right now. But my belief was that if I could make a go of it during a difficult market, that I'd have longevity in the industry, which is what I was looking for. And the commitment was that I would give it 2 years to replace my income in pharma. And if I wasn't able to do that, at least I tried and I'd give up the dream. But I was actually able to resign from my pharmaceutical sales position 15 months into getting my real estate license.
Nice. Now, your progression has been pretty incredible. You've done extremely well in the sales industry, obviously. But tell us about what your kind of passion is in the market. Like, do you have a niche? Is it a specialization? What's been your passion in the industry?
So my passion in the industry, I wouldn't say it's a niche. It's something that I like to cast broadly, is that I think the industry as a whole can elevate their standards and hold themselves to a higher degree of professionalism. Sales is sales. And Jim, we talked right before hitting the record button that I think any sales professional can become a real estate professional, but not every real estate agent is a sales professional. And I think that's a bit of a disconnect because, you know, sometimes people perceive salespeople as a dirty word, but there's truly an art and a skill set that goes into understanding the value that you bring to a prospective client and then the service that goes along with that. So I'm a firm believer in being able to know your value, articulate your value, present your value, and then deliver on your value.
I love it. And, you know, with the NAR settlement, now we're having to actually have that value conversation, not just with sellers, but with buyers. We should have always been doing it with buyers, obviously, but now it's going to become forefront. Let's dive into the value kind of conversation. What do you think goes into kind of determining your value as an individual agent, not just from your company's standard, but what do you bring to the table?
Yeah, I think as an individual agent, it really starts with you, right? We are the product. I don't know any agent that can walk a prospective buyer through a home or a client through a home and know that they absolutely hate it and yet convince them that it's the right home for them. So I say, really, it's how you show up, and everybody's a little bit different in that manner. It's how you dress, how you carry yourself, how you make eye contact, shake hands, smile. For me, I have a playlist that gets me motivated and excited when I'm getting ready to meet with a prospective client for the first time. And the education piece never stops. I'm an avid learner. I'm always reading. I think books are one of the greatest gifts in the world that somebody who has a wealth of knowledge will package it and sell it to me for $20.
Now, let me ask you about the actual presentation of the value. Obviously, people have to like you. They've got to know you. They got to trust you. So you build some rapport and you have great conversations and you're educating the client. But are you an advocate of doing a visual presentation to buyers and sellers?
Absolutely. For the entirety of my real estate career, I've always done visual presentations. We know that most people process information visually. It's over at 80% of the way we process information. And if you're sitting across the table from more than one person, one's going to be visual, one's going to be audio. So it's really important to deliver that information in a concise manner that the consumer can understand. So we use something called our home buyer's roadmap. And I take the prospective buyer step by step through every step of the transaction from initial interview to the closing table. I articulate what happens in every step, and then I demonstrate how I bring value to that step. So it's a practice that I do with my team where we write out our scripting so that we're really confident in how we are articulating that.
But let's zone in on the buyer side, because we talk about sellers all the time in this industry, but the buyers are kind of, this is like a revelation that we're going to start doing buyer presentations now, because we're used to doing them on the listing side. We're not used to doing it on the buyer side. So how does that look, just kind of mechanically, organically, when you're talking to a buyer for the first time, they call and say, "Hey, I want to go see a house," or you meet them in an open house. How do you move from that to, "Hey, I'd like to talk to you about my value proposition and walk you through your presentation"? How does that happen exactly for your team?
That's a great question. So I think it starts with discovery. One of the things that I speak to often is I can't possibly know what my value is to a prospective client if I don't know what's important to them. So I'm really trying to understand why are they considering making a move? Is this an optional thing or is this a must happen? What's their timeline? What are their personal circumstances? Because I think we all understand that truly a decision to make a move is rarely I wake up one day and this is what I'm going to do. There's typically a significant life event that is tied to that, whether it's marriage, divorce, babies, death, there's all of the different ends of the spectrum. And so until I really know what they're trying to achieve, I don't know that I do bring value. And if they have a goal that I'm not confident that I can help them achieve, then I'm going to bow out.
I love that. That's something that I think a lot of agents don't really think about, is that what's the goal they're trying to achieve, and can I fulfill that role? It's kind of like a doctor. You go see a generalist, and if you have a specific need, they refer you to a specialist, and I think that's great. In your value proposition, in your presentation, walk us through, what does that look like? Is it a multiple page, or is it one kind of, "Hey, here's my roadmap, and I'm going to walk you through the conversational steps," or is it like 15, 20 pages? What does it look like?
No, it's pretty simple. It's actually just a single bifold, 8.5 by 11. And on the back side is where we have our visual of the process start to finish.
Got it.
So the process that we use to dissect that, if you will, is start with the feature or the step, and then the bridge, which we always use the same bridge. It's what this means for you is the benefit that we bring to that step, and then we tie it back to whatever's most important to that client. So let's say it's somebody that's expanding their family and they're saying, I really need to be in a home by my due date in September. Then I'm going to say, do you see how this is going to help me get you into your home by September so that you're ready for baby? And then we really go step by step and make sure that we are able to articulate our value in each step. I will preface this by saying I'm in New York State, which is an attorney state. So we have a few extra steps and a longer process. So I may not drive it home on every single step, but I'm making sure I hit the key factors so that the prospective client understands that I do more than open a door and then hand the keys at a closing table. There is a lot that goes into the contract to close portion. There's a lot that goes into putting together a strategy to help a buyer secure a home in a difficult market, and I'm making sure that I'm delivering that value and articulating it.
I love it. Now let's talk about commissions. And I know one of your topics is protecting your commission. Obviously, there's been a lot of commission compression over the last, let's say, 10 years, and looks like we're facing the possibility of that again. So what does that look like for you when you're having commission conversations? And obviously, we're not price fixing here. We're just talking about whatever your value is your value, and how do you defend that value?
Yeah, and I think myself and my team are in somewhat of a unique position that this is the way that we've always done it. And I think that was the benefit of when I started, somebody taught me to do it this way and I didn't know any different. So, as we know, commissions are always negotiable, have always been negotiable. Where I see that there's an opportunity here is I think so many of us default to looking in the MLS, excuse me, and saying, this is what the listing agent's willing to compensate a buyer's agent and accepting that as truth and just saying, okay, that's what I get. Where truly in the changes that are being proposed, we now have the ability to articulate our value and set our value for ourselves. So that's an opportunity. That's a win in my book. One of the things that I've always done is work with a buyer's rep agreement. I know the level of service I provide. I know the level of professionalism, and I really am looking for a reciprocal relationship. And I say that. The other piece is I outline what my compensation is. And instead of saying the seller pays that or whatever, you know, kind of default setting you have, I've always said my first line of defense is to try to get the seller to cover the compensation. If they're unwilling to do that, either in whole, excuse me, Jim, I'm fighting a cold.
No worries.
Either in whole or in part, next I'm going to work with the lender to see if we can roll it into the mortgage in terms of a concession. And if neither of those options are viable, you'd be looking at bringing some extra money to the closing table, but you'll know that in advance.
Let's
So
park
again,
there for a
putting
second.
them through the process.
I'm curious on the lender side. So are you talking about maybe doing an interest rate, slightly higher interest rate to help pay for that commission? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, what I'm looking at is asking the lender if there's the ability to do a concession where maybe we're going to put a little bit higher price point on the contract with a seller credit or concession back that's designed to cover the compensation.
I got you. Okay, gotcha. So it's interesting because we're going to get into this situation now where, we're going to set our fee. Let's just say it's 2.5, 3%, whatever we're charging the buyer. And now the fee is not going to show up in MLS. And my perception of what's going to start happening is that we're going to include this probably in the offer where it'll say the seller is to pay, or provide an incentive to the buyer's agent for X dollars. And this is important because I think if you can't articulate that as you just did, that, here's some ways we can compensate this. This is where agents are going to fumble the ball and
Yes.
they're going to get lost really fast, or they're going to agree to discount their fee unnecessarily. So I think it's so important that we learn the scripting for this and we learn how to articulate this. But let me just I want you to walk me through. You've gone through your buyer presentation, and most agents in most states today are still not doing a buyer representation agreement yet. They're going to have to in July, probably. How do you transition into that? Like, do you get the form out and say, and this is how I work with all my buyers, and I just want to walk you through the agreement? Or what's that conversation look like?
Yes. So I definitely make sure that they understand the value that I bring to the transaction and try to give some real life examples. And I explain that, working to open the door and show you a house does not constitute fiduciary representation. So really helping them understand how agency works. And I'll give an example of, I'm in a market that has basements. So I'll say if we haven't defined our relationship where my fiduciary duty is to you, and I take you into a home and there's a horizontal crack in the foundation, I'm really not supposed to draw attention to that. You can ask me about it and I can't lie to you, but I'm not, being really forthright with my representation to you because I'm representing the seller technically. Now, if I'm representing you as the buyer's agent, which is how I prefer to work, I would draw attention to that and suggest that we have a structural engineer evaluate before we make any decisions. And when I can give them that real life example of what the difference is between walking through a home with an agent who is still sub-agent of the listing agent versus having a buyer's agent, it resonates. And I'm very candid. Like, that's really the only way that I will work. And so may I represent you as a buyer's agent? And when they hear those things, they're like, well, yeah, why wouldn't I want somebody to represent me in my best interest? So my closing is really soft. And I'm also really a strong believer in exclusivity from the standpoint that I know what my capacity is. Like, I know that I can't take on and offer the level of service that I hold myself to and want to offer my clients if I have 8, 9, 10 buyers going. So, I will cap myself at 4 buyers. And oftentimes I'm looking at somebody and I'm saying, I have the capacity to take on one additional buyer right now. would you like me to represent you as a buyer's agent?
I love that limit, the giving them some limitation there, like some exclusivity there. I love it. Let me so kind of backing up, every state's a little bit different in their agency rules. So, you know, we're a national audience here. So agency in New York could be different from where your state is. But I want to point something out, though, which is, I think, really important to that whole concept of agency representation, is that as the NAR settlement rolls out, one conversation that's coming up a lot is that maybe we're going to get a lot of buyers that will want to be unrepresented, go straight to the listing agent. And this is conversation you just brought up is really key to that. Because here's the benefit of buyer representation. If you go directly to the listing agent, that listing agent will probably end up just representing the seller and treating you as a customer. So they got to be honest and give you fair dealing and provide all the documentation, but it doesn't mean they're representing you. So back to pointing out flaws in the house and other things like that, this is exactly, to your point, Beth, why you'd want to have a buyer's representative, because you're going to be the advocate for the buyer, which I just think is a really smart way to play this. And to explain the value proposition that you have somebody in your corner, which I think is really, really smart. Let's talk a little bit about a leadership in the industry. I know you're an advocate for, you know, diversity in the leadership roles. Talk to us about that a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm a women-owned brokerage. I'm an independent broker. I actually just transitioned to join forces with another brokerage. But it just dawned on me one day that I was looking around, and I have a ton of respect for everybody in the industry and the men in the industry. I've got some great mentors, but I realized that there were so few women in leadership in real estate. And so one of the things that I'm passionate about is surrounding myself with more women leaders so that we can all rise together, and also helping the women that are in the industry now understand that they do have that capacity and capability if it's something that they want. Because yeah. Sometimes I believe that the only thing that holds us back is ourselves, because as women, we have a tendency to try to be everything to everybody. And when you can align yourself with somebody that can show you how it can be done, I think it's valuable. We have, you know, obviously more than half of the agents are female, and I'd love to see more female leaders in the real estate world.
Well, my first broker 35 years ago was a woman, Beneva Clark. She owned a Century 21 office, was a great leader back then. And I love working with women leaders from across the country. They do an amazing job. And I think they bring something, a different perspective. So I think it's an interesting, you know, to bring that up. And I think it's important. So moving forward, where do you see yourself in terms of the your office and adjusting and maybe adapting to the NAR settlement? Is there anything else differently you're going to be doing with your, because you sound like you're already ahead of the game. You're already doing buyer representation agreements. You're already doing a form of a buyer presentation. Anything else you're going to be adapting and changing?
And I will preface this by saying, speak to your broker and find out what the rules and regulations are in your market. But one of the things that we're going to be implementing is collecting a retainer from our buyer clients at the front end of the transaction. Again, I think part of the reason the industry is under attack, because we haven't held ourselves to that high level of professionalism that we should. And, you know, doctors get it, attorneys get it. I can't contact an attorney and ask them to start working on my behalf without signing a letter of intent and paying a retainer. Yeah. Same thing if you go to the doctor, the first thing they collect from you is a copay.
Right.
And they submit to insurance and insurance covers it, great. And if not, you're going to receive a bill. So I think if we want to operate at that higher level and hold ourselves to that standard, it's absolutely important to make sure that we're being compensated for our time. Obviously, if everything goes smoothly, the deal closes, the buyer is going to see that as a credit on their closing statement. But I think forward and go, okay, so they've signed with me, they've agreed to compensate me, but what if somebody gets a little squirrely and goes directly to a for sale by owner and makes a deal without involving me in the transaction? Am I going to litigate that? Probably not. So by collecting a retainer, I think I'm going to attract higher caliber buyers, and I think it's going to mitigate loss.
Let me ask you, so not to quote numbers, but will that be for your team, will that be a flat fee or a percentage of the perceived total?
What we're going to look at is a percentage of the perceived total, and it's going to be based off of the buyer's budget or their pre-approval amount.
Gotcha. Very interesting. And then the company will hold that until closing and then disperse that to an agent.
Yep.
Assuming it closes. Right. Got it. I got another question around commissions in general. Let's pivot to seller conversations for a second, because this is something that's being really missed, is the fact that when we're going out and talking to sellers now, sellers will have seen the news. They'll have saw, hey, so does this mean I don't have to pay a buyer's agent anymore? How are you handling that conversation with, on the seller side of the conversation? What are you saying to buyers, to sellers?
And I am starting to get those questions, even though we know we're still a few months out from the changes being implemented, assuming it all gets approved. So the conversations I'm having with my sellers is a general supply and demand conversation. Right? So my responsibility is to market your home to the most amount of people to attract the most interest, to get you the best price, the best terms, and the smoothest deal. With that being said, we've already seen, I think, in most markets, the challenges that have come for buyers over the last several years. So we start back during the pandemic and we had really low interest rates and people had an infusion of money from whatever circumstances, PPP money or unemployment. And then they've been staring at the same four walls for several months because they've been quarantined. So everybody wants to buy a bigger, newer home. And then the rates went up. And so we saw that buyer pool get a little bit smaller. Affordability continues to go down. So now we have a little bit smaller pool of buyer. And then if you factor in that you're going to have to ask the buyer to bring additional money to the closing table, we're reducing that pool even further. So a conversation with the seller is, in order for us to cast the widest net, we can't mitigate, we can't control the market, we can't control the interest rates, but this is a piece that we can control. And then I'm talking about the potential liability. Like, yes, in the short term, there could be a savings in terms of the percentage of the sale price of the home. But if a buyer comes in and they haven't been educated on whether or not they're receiving representation, I don't want to be held liable for a potential suit, which is ultimately why buyer's agency exists today anyway.
Right. Interesting. I love the fact the buyer pool conversation has gotten skinnier and smaller and smaller. And I just saw a study that was between 30 and 50% of all buyers will not be able to write a check at closing. So you would then be cutting your small buyer pool again in half if you didn't offer to pay the buyer representation commission. I had another agent talk to me about doing a survey around each listing that he's about to take. And to just survey the other agents and ask them what's the buyer representation fee. And obviously now we can see it in MLS, but as of July, we won't be able to, but we can still ask the questions, find out what everybody else is paying. And then you're right, it becomes a marketing question. It becomes a way to elevate your listing above the other listings and really a marketing play rather than just a commission conversation, which I think is interesting. So if you're advising brand new agents coming into this industry, you started in a terrible market and you thrived, right? And a lot of people would perceive we just came off of a 29-year low in the number of sales volume in the country for 2023. This year's obviously better. It's been better so far. But now we're facing this big, some people call it a headwind, this change in representation. What do you say to new agents joining the industry today? What would be your messaging to them?
I think new agents have the most opportunity because they don't have any, I won't say bad habits, but old habits to break. Change is hard for a lot of people. And so somebody new coming in that can align with a great mentor, great coach, great teacher who can teach them this way right out of the gate. And I think that's why I'm fortunate. I didn't even know that there was another way to do it because the person that trained me said, this is how you do it. And that's all I knew.
I love it. I love it. So, Beth, if people want to reach out to you, they want to learn more about what you're doing, who you are, what you're all about, how would they reach out to you to learn more about you?
Yeah, the easiest way to find me is on Instagram. I'm Beth by a Billion, which is a nod to my hometown team, the Buffalo Bills, because even during our worst seasons, we go into every game and say, Bills are going to win by a billion.
Awesome.
So that's the best way to reach me. You can DM me there. I answer all my own DMs. There's a link in my bio with all my contact information. And I'm a firm believer that it's collaboration over competition. So if I can be a resource to anybody, please reach out.
I love it. And if you like this video, you like the content we brought to you today, we'd love your 5-star review. Always, of course, subscribe. We'd love to see you subscribe. Beth, it's been an absolute pleasure, and learning from you has been a real privilege. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Jim.
If you liked this program, please subscribe and leave a review. And if you would like to explore our coaching platform, please check out www.erealestatecoach.com for 2 free weeks of coaching. Thanks again for tuning in. and we'll catch you in the next episode of the eRealEstate Coach Podcast.